Let me say this very carefully, very clearly, with great precision. If there's anything else you want to do, go do it. If there's any doubts about any of the things that we're about, go do the alternative. God doesn't want anybody here who wants something else. If it's an if only I could do this, or if this hadn't happened, go do it. The only thing that is real, the only thing that lasts, the only thing that has any merit is the resurrection of Christ. Everything else in the universe is a picture of it, and a picture will fail. Everything, relationships, sex, money, no money, are all pictures that are part and parcel of the flesh, therefore they will fail. Your sexual relationships are going to fail whether you get any or not. You're going to be frustrated, and you're going to die a frustrated woman sexually. Period. No thing here, no thing in the Bible, and no thing from God, no drugs, no man in the world is going to change that. Do you understand that? Period. You're always, if you're going to figure it out in the flesh, going to be confused. You're going to die a confused old man, uptight. If you're always going to try to find out what the right thing to do is, you're going to die trying to find out what the right thing to do is. I mean, hear me. We're not about any of these things, and it just drives me up a tree when you start on them. If you want that shit, get the fuck out of here. I am bored to death with it. We are the most fortunate people on the face of the earth. And you consider it lightly because you don't get any. If our relationships, if our being here is based on anything other than the fellowship of His resurrection, we are nothing, and I don't care. Do you understand? I don't care about any of your other shit. Nothing. I'll push it with you. I'll talk to you to try to reveal to you how it is only a picture, and it's a picture that will fail, because if the picture could be real, then God would not have to have sent His Son. But every picture is going to fail. You're never going to get it right. You're always going to be frustrated. Lead us not into temptation. Lead us not inward. All I've heard tonight is inward. If you think there's any life inward, then stay there. We are a people who are not about giving breath to that which is inward. We are a people who have but one function, and that is to slay the one who causes us to see after the flesh, who causes us to sense after the spirit, after these sensory perceptions, has but one function, and that is to be slain, dead. Now, am I trying to con you into something? No. I don't care if you're here or not. Can you understand that? I am not trying to gain converts. Does that make sense to you? You got to suspect that by now. God doesn't want any converts. God wants a people that are fed up with the world and all that's in it. That's the only way you can take the Afghanin. Otherwise, to be here, if you're not fed up with the world, to be here will cause you misery. Do you understand? Because you will eat and drink the body and blood of the Lord unworthily. That will mean that you will cause all kinds of illnesses to come upon yourself. You will cause all kinds of misery to come upon yourself, even by being here, if you don't want to be here. Your own worst fears will come upon you. If you're here for anything else other than the resurrection, get the fuck out of here. Tonight. You know, there's all kinds of places you can go to talk about God and sex. There's all kinds of places you can go to talk about God and money. There are places that will have how-to seminars that will have the appearance of success that may last, you know, 2 or 3 years. That can pump you up to such a place that you can gain sustenance from another body of flesh, and it'll last for as long as 7 years. That's how long it takes to eat an idol. If your mind wants that, go. You understand me? We are a people who have picked up the cross. That means we place no trust whatsoever in the senses. We place no credence in what we feel or hear or touch or smell. We look not at the things that are seen, but the things which are not seen. Period. I don't give a shit whether you ever get married. Do you understand? I don't care whether you ever get satisfied. I don't care whether you ever have any friendship after the flesh. I don't care whether you ever have any money. I don't care whether you ever have any sweetness. I care about the resurrection of Christ in you. You must have suspected that by now. I'm not interested in those little shitty things that are going to fail. I'm interested in seeing you pick up the cross, so that you might abandon yourselves to the mystery. Because woe unto you if you consider this mystery lightly, because you've heard too much ever to be the same again. I can give you a litany of people who have considered this stuff lightly. It's the dumbest thing you can do. I will bless them that bless you, and I will curse them that I will bitterly execrate them that consider you lightly. He was talking about the Christ in you, the resurrected Christ. And you consider that lightly when you give credence to the flesh. Am I communicating? Now, is there anything you don't understand? What's so funny? What? Huh? What?
He just liked it. It was great.
No, actually, today I was sitting in the Dixie House with Steve right before we came here. And I was just like, this is all such a breath and a vapor and all this. It was just like such a peculiar. That's when I came here. I was just like,
what's a breath?
Still in breath. I don't know.
It was a breath within a breath.
Away,
listen, I mean, I'll put up with you for a while, you know. I'll listen to your shit for a minute or two.
That's about it.
So why don't we talk about it?
Why do we talk about it? Because I am stupid. Because I am not as spiritual as Paul was. This would have lasted about 3 seconds with Paul. If you're here for any other reason, then this isn't the place for you. Do you understand? I'm not saying whether you're saved or not saved, whether you're going to hell or heaven, I don't give a shit. We are a people that are going after a point that is very narrow, with no... I mean, this is the worst place in the world for you to be. I've said before, and I believe it with everything in me, and the longer we continue, I believe it stronger. We are, you know, like the gates of hell are right here, and we're right there. There's a whole world of religion and experimenting and psychology and moves of this or that and political movements and social movements and religious activity out here. But we're right at the edge. And as long as I'm alive, we will get even closer to the edge. You understand? I mean, I'm not going to condemn somebody if they leave. A whole lot of people have left. I don't know whether they're going to heaven or hell. I don't care. It's not my business. I know that I must be faithful to what I see. If I'm not, I'll go to hell. And worse than that, worse than hell would be I would be stranded here in this life with an accusing heart. That's worse than hell. Please, think about it. You can be around here for any reason. You can stay around as long as you like. But be honest. You know, if you want to get laid more than you want to know the revelation of Christ, then go get laid. If you want to get married more than you want to know the revelation of Christ, go get married. If you want a nice, happy family more than you want the revelation of Christ, go find a nice, happy family. If you want a Norman Vincent Peale rabbi, go find one.
A nice guy rabbi.
Way
of thinking.
We're friends with those people.
What?
I have third-degree burns on my exposed flesh. I mean, I'm just sick of trying to figure it out. That's the bottom line. Which is what you said. I should be sick of it. I'm sick of it.
Okay, great. Then let him apprehend you. You rest. You don't have to figure it out ever again.
Yeah, it just seems... Are you really sick of it, or do you like it?
Yeah, but can you? All that's happening is the knowledge that you can rest. But see then the cross. I am crucified. I am dead. I don't have to worry about it. That's the only difference between me and you. I don't try to figure it out. Do you understand that?
It'll just hard to be locked in to try to figure it out. Apparently locked in.
Well, you're not locked. There's grace. Do you understand what's happening to you is sin? Sin is coming in like a flood. But grace will overpower it.
Amen.
Hope so. Because I could feel the same sickness that you felt. But I don't see that. The other side.
Well, I know that you are not sufficiently crazy. I mean, I know you're a little bit crazy, but you're not sufficiently crazy to have stayed around here for 12 years without having seen the other side of it.
Right.
So I know you've seen the other side of it. So you can't hustle me now telling me you haven't seen. You have seen.
I have seen.
Okay, so now take heed to that light shining in the dark place. Till the day dawn and the day star arise in your heart. It's surer than that's going to happen. All right.
I'm tired of screaming.
The process of growth in the flesh is one of slowly but surely developing a sense of of... I, not I. Am not. Do you understand? It's a slow, long process.
Of spiritual growth?
No. Natural for right now. It's a slow process that takes place, right? That process of when you're in the midst of trying to find the ams or am nots or the I or I am nots, when that's all confused and you're trying to apprehend all these different things, it's called adolescence. Okay? You agree with that? Now, remember what John said in 1 John. He said, I write unto you little children, or darling infants, because your sin is forgiven. Then it says, I write unto you adolescents, because you know the Father. And he says, I write unto you young men, because you are strong, and the word of God abideth continually in you, and you have overcome the evil one. I write unto you fathers, because you've been with him from the beginning. Now, for the most part, Bananas is still in the adolescent state as a body, as one. And in that state, when there is massive confusion, when everything seems to go screwy on you, when nothing seems to be collected, nothing is right, there's only one sense that can really have any merit in you, and that's the anchor that says, I know the Father. Doesn't do any good to talk. It doesn't do any good to Bible study. It doesn't do any good to come and, oh, I got a little rule about a covering, or I've got a little rule about this, or I've got a little rule about that, or I've got a little liturgy about this. The only thing that can help you in that state when you're pushed to the edge of the envelope is I know the Father. Now, it seems to me like, Ed and Harry, others, you're right on that edge all the time. You only, all the little shitty rules about spiritual stuff, or what do we believe about this, or don't do you a damn bit of good. It's only that there is somewhere deep inside you an anchor that says, I know the Father. Now, you said, I've always had this childlike sense of impending doom or disaster.
It cops to that.
You're a Gretchener.
What?
Right.
You're a Gretchener.
Yeah. Called the other shoe syndrome.
Well, Harry's got all kinds of names for it. He says it's either the other shoe syndrome, or the large print giveth and the small print taketh away syndrome, or always out to get him syndrome, or... Oh, yeah, the evil rabbi and the wonderful, poor, innocent Levi syndrome, or... He's got a wide variety of those scenarios that he leans on. But the sad part of it is that you believe only a certain type of magic or ritualized behavior can get you out of it. You used to.
You call yours figuring it out.
I'll see if I can figure it out.
Yeah, that's a mom.
Can you see that spiritually figuring it out is sorcery? And can you see that having the right attitude or the right clothes on is a form of magic?
I'll be in a bed.
What? Or otherwise. Yeah.
Do you understand how much of your sense of well-being is based on what you're wearing?
No, it applies even to your working shirts, Harry.
No, it applies. No, there's a sense. There's a sense about you that defines you, that your clothing has to be the right, because it'll give you a sense of well-being. I mean, give me any other example or justification for it,
for caring
what clothes look like. Because it's a form of magic. Do you understand? You've never understood before.
Well, I don't know.
You never thought about it before. Really, but okay, but I've said it, now you understand it.
It's a costume, yeah.
It's a costume, it's a magic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a witch doctor's costume.
Right.
her little ghost day.
It's all business suit is.
Yeah.
You understand?
Boy, I understand.
It's an air.
I can feel that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you see, you believe that only magic or ritual or prayer will get you out of this sense of impending doom. Now, everybody in here is guilty of that.
Yeah.
You understand? Now, each of you have your own kinds of magic. Daryl's trying to get small. He's trying to become invisible.
He says,
I call my magic a brain.
Vanishing cream. But think about your magic for a minute. Think about your rituals. Now, the moment you can see that they are magic and or rituals is the moment they can lose their purpose. It doesn't mean you have to try not to do them or something. It just means they don't have any control over you anymore. Can you see the magic that happens in you when you begin to have a sense of impending doom?
You try to get out of it and you try to figure out
a way. Right.
Escape.
Let me go talk to Oli. I got to talk to you, Oli.
I'm starting to get a feeling of impending doom. My incantation is always to, like, in my mind, just flatten out. Like, you know how a dog rolls over? It goes like that. It's like to cop instantly to whatever, you know.
Everything.
Yeah, everything.
You cop to everything.
Everything. You just roll
guilty
over.
Guilty of everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Chameleon.
Yeah, I mean, just flat out.
Invisible.
You're in the lizard, not me.
Probably should.
I'm not really sure what's going on.
What do you mean?
You look weird, awesome.
Thank
you.
I'm
not sure what we're talking about.
Yes, you are.
Yes,
you are. We are talking about the core of your being, is what we're talking about.
Is that why I feel like something's going on?
Yeah.
It's really something like flop sweat. They just see me. The Levi's new clothes.
Now, again, only magic, ritual, or prayer can tame this disaster that's impending.
Ritual or prayer?
Magic or ritual or prayer. But your prayer, huh?
What are we talking about? Is this like a new
thing? Well, it's something that applies to what's going on right now.
Yes, he's done it.
That collar is getting real.
She's looking like God.
Like 20 minutes.
You understand that so much of your being is anxiety in the face of helplessness?
Yeah.
Does that communicate?
Like our whole being.
How much of your time is spent in a state of anxiety in the face of helplessness?
Yeah. 8 hours a day at work for one.
I don't have that kind of time.
Do you understand that you never have to experience that again? You call it faith. Can you believe something? Can you hear me? And this won't be. This will be hard for you to believe. Maybe. Can you believe that I never experienced that feeling? The only thing that I experience when I feel helpless, but it's not about the core. It's about Tara and I. And that's why the only one who knows my weaknesses is Tara. And that's why it seems frustrating to her, because she sees weakness with me when we're alone, but she sees something else as Rabbi. It's not really two different things, but it's something that she can't quite get a hold of. But she's the only one that sees my anxiety and helplessness in the face because of our relationship. But it's never at the core of why, you know, like, why am I alive kind of stuff. He was. I spent a lifetime in that. Now, each one of you have had periods of time when there was no anxiety and no feeling of helplessness. All your life you've had those. Brief periods, brief moments. And some have been sustained longer and longer. Our language had put names on that. And it used to be called all kinds of stuff.
for Harry, it was called getting high. But can you see, look at yourself as a bunch of chemicals in a container that have electrical impulses. What God calls all of those places where there was peace, where there was no sense of helplessness, where there was no anxiety, he calls that his son, Jesus Christ, who has always been with you. He's always been trying to express himself through you. Always. That's why we're not we don't say, you know, have you accepted Jesus as your personal Savior? He's always been my personal Savior. I didn't know it. Now what that we know, it's like in the past we didn't know what the hell was going on. Then we became believers and we found out we had an inheritance. And we were not sure what it meant. Now we find out we can possess the inheritance. Now we find out that we can dwell there permanently. As I told you guys, each one of you, this at your first fruit offering. Your inheritance is to rightly dwell in this place where you never again have to feel a state of helplessness and you never have to feel a state of anxiety. You can always be in a position of peace vis-a-vis your purpose in life. And it never has to be doubted. And it can come the moment that you let go of trying to apprehend it. Then at that moment, it will apprehend you. And you'll find that the state of, for most of you, the state of anxiety and anxiousness is your standard mode. This is where you live. There's always this sense, right? And it's covered over, but there's always your basic being is anxiousness. And then the abnormal being is peace. It can reverse. It can reverse so that your normal state of behavior, your normal state of being is peace. And anxiousness to you then is only an indicator to pray. But always for someone else. The anxiousness can come from any one of 10 million stimuli from the flesh. But you know for a certain that God is your Father and nothing can harm you. Therefore, if there's ever in you a state of anything other than peace, you know it's the signal never to pray for yourself, but always to pray for someone else or something else. As you exercise that authority, slowly but surely, you'll gain more and you'll know more about who you're praying for. Now, some of you have that as an office in the body, intercessor. All of us are intercessors to some extent. All of us pray always. But for some, their actual purpose in being is to pray for others. Now, the way that's seen is the more you judge others, the more obvious it is that your office is to pray for others. So when you see them in a state, when you see somebody and you judge them down, that's the Holy Spirit saying to you, not you can judge, you see them judged down, but what happens is you transform it into praying for them. The moment you pray for them, you'll find something out. That it will cause you to have a greater sense of peace and a greater intolerance for no peace. Am I communicating? But the way in which, you see, always, the way to peace is to knowing that it's always for someone else. That's why the sensations of the flesh are always a deception, because they're always trying to put all their attention on you. Everything that we are about, remember I told you before a long time ago that all the things that we see in myth or cartoons or plots of plays or even songs, the ones that become popular in the human condition are the ones that tell the myth better. The reason that Mickey Mouse is so popular among children all over the world and many adults is because he's always tricking the stupid cat. He's always tricking the all-powerful force. There's only one switch in all of men, and it's a primal switch. And it's the switch on is towards well-being, the switch off is towards pain or discomfort. Well-being, discomfort. Well-being, discomfort. You know, that's what you've done to mold your personality, is you've moved towards well-being and away from discomfort all your life. You understand? Pain, well-being. Pain, well-being. Now, that's what you're supposed to have been done. That's how you got molded into your psychic being. The thing that you hate, the thing that God hates, is to say, well, I'm going to take the safe path where there's neither pain nor a sense of well-being. That's where 99.99% of the world is. They've tried to develop a safe path between pain and well-being. You would think they would always want to go towards well-being, but they don't. The reason is of guilt. They don't believe they deserve to be in a sense of well-being, so they move towards the middle. They don't believe that there's any purpose in pain, so they move away from pain. So they live a lot. That's what life becomes. Do you understand? Guilt keeps them from being towards well-being or pleasure, and pain keeps them from the risk at that end of the spectrum. Now,
that's largely where I live, a lot, or have lived.
Now,
you
must believe in this transcendency of something, i.e. in a magical efficacy of a prayer or some religious act or some ritual to get you, not even, eventually, your senses become so dulled that you're not even aware, you don't even care whether you get to pleasure, you just want to get away from pain. And you use all kinds of magic and ritual to get you there. You understand me? Well, in the economy of God, pretty soon all of your ritual fails. Can you understand how the sexual orgasm is the greatest thing to bring you away from pain? There's no other drug like it. There's no other alcohol like it. It's that which you do when you're alone or lonesome to bring you out of the loneliness of pain. That's why the bars are full of lonely people that want to get away from pain. Well, the reason that you don't know more about the resurrection here is because you've used all these other things, the ritual, the magic. Masturbation becomes the ritual. Do you understand that? Sex becomes the ritual, the need, the affirmation. I am alone. I am in pain. Oh, I need you. Do you understand how that's the biggest bunch of bullshit spiritually that can exist? You understand? I mean, this is flying in the face of every romance novel, of every idea of love there is, but the idea of I need you is the greatest statement of egocentric behavior that there is. Oh, I really need you. What you're saying is, oh, I really want to avoid pain, and I must go through a learned ritual that's magical so I can stop this pain. You don't believe that the resurrection is at the pain, at the end of the pain. Am I communicating? we so quickly move to the ritual. Our being conceives of it as a magic ritual. We so easily move towards those infinite number of rituals when we're confronted with pain or discomfort. And God is waiting. He's crying out, saying, endure, abide in it and see me. Abide in the pain and the aloneness and see me and me alone. And he is there at every one of those points in pain. Every one of those points of aloneness. Every one of those points of need that you think can only be solved by another human. It's never to be solved by a human being. You can't, and you can't take matters in your own hand. Eventually that gets old. The pun was intended. And the only thing that could bring you back to a feeling of oneness was sex. Because you saw death as the feeling of a threat of separation. There's only really two motivators within us, and that's life and death. Death means separation, life means sex. God says both of those motivators are only of the flesh that have to be experienced at both ends in order that there would be resurrection. But the place that you're going to be most deceived is in the area of love and or sex. I mean, you can get really sincere here.
You know, I don't have, but I know that this is part of what's going on with me with cigarettes.
Probably.
When reaching for a cigarette is...
It's a ritual. It's a magic.
Yeah, it's the same kind of magic thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, can you see... All we're end up saying is whenever there's a feeling or a sense of that I need to have a cigarette, or I need this, or I need that, or I need this, the Spirit of God is crying out in you, wait. Wait, that you might see the resurrected Christ. If we could really see ourselves, we would see that our whole being and our whole sense of ourself has been defined only by magic. By magic, by ritual. Just as clearly as though we were cutting ourselves for identification and putting on all kinds of weird costumes and all these little nuances are only magical acts that we've learned by to define ourselves with.
I remembered yesterday about when I don't know how old I was, but these two friends of mine and I swiped a pack of Kent cigarettes from his mother and a men's magazine from his father. We were out in the woods looking at the men's magazine, getting turned on, trying to masturbate and smoking all at the same time.
Boy, your hands were busy, weren't they?
Yeah.
And they were taking a drink at the same time.
Yeah. Just
all of Jack Daniels.
How do you hold all those things?
And learning to dance. But it was...
juggle.
The reason I mentioned is I can sort of remember how unbelievably magical that was. Everything was new and different. It was totally different than anything that had gone before. And I remember clearly that I wasn't successful at masturbating, but even in not having an orgasm, it still felt like a whole different world. Mixed with the cigarettes and the ladies in their underwear was just...
Yeah, great. My brothers and I kind of did the same thing, because we used to get my mom and dad cigarettes and we'd go out by the side of the house and we'd smoke those cigarettes, and every other word we said would be a cuss word.
Yeah.
Every other word, it was like...
Yeah, I remember in the fourth grade, we said, getting on Ted Tucker on the side of the house,
And that's what cigarettes were and have been for me. Is a, I don't know what the word is. You know, where you make a connection.
Yeah, well, that's totem, what I'm remembering. Yeah, what do you call it, totem? Is the fraternity thing.
You know what I'm saying? It's like the two things are that and the fact that I associate it with, that means that particular thing is over. I mean, you know, like when I want it the worst is when I leave work, you know, or when I'm with somebody else smoking.
Or when you finish dinner.
No, I really don't. I don't really want to smoke.
Well, I mean, I haven't. I'm telling you what I'm...
Comparison.
Yeah, comparison-wise.
It's all relative. It's, okay. I think the whole idea of, like, a, you know, secrecy, it's like a secret society. It's like after you leave work, it's your private world. You know, you're separate from everybody and God, and you can do whatever you want, and there's sexuality in it, and magic, and it's, you know.
I really remember it.
Oh, God, we didn't even inhale. I mean, we were so little. I can't remember how I think about that.
But you learned how. I gotta say this too. This morning, Barbara and I went to Target, because this reminds me. We went to Target, and she's shopping, at, she's in the ladies' department, and I'm walking down to go to the men's department to get these shirts, and there's the ladies' underwear department, and all these photographs of girls in their underwear and all this wonderful underwear, and I'm just I was like transported into, it's like Disneyland. And I really am fascinated with women's underwear. I even remarked to her about it, but it goes back to that.
Yeah, it's like
magic.
Remember we talked about the idea that you try to do everything in your power to avoid the sense of aloneness. And that all human acts from the time of the consciousness of self are acts that either avoid being alone or move towards being with somebody. And that's all magic. It's all ritual. It's all learned. And none of it's really special. Because you find out everybody did the same damn thing. It's sort of pedestrian, you know, and then pretty soon you say, oh, shit. So then you have to have special magic, right? No. Daryl knows a lot about special magic.
Oh.
Daryl's magic has to be special because he's so special. Then he finds out... then he finds out...
That's not true.
Then he finds out... Then he finds out there's all these nerds that have exactly the same special magic as he does.
They all tie their hair back and wear baggy suits.
Yeah. But his magic always had to be special because he was so special.
Stand up yourself.
I can't.
I'd like to. Defend yourself. You're going down.
But think about it. Think about how then... Talking about magic, how language became magic and ritual. The reason, think about it, the first word the baby learns is mom.
And, that opens
and when mom, or pop, or something like that, but that word is that word that brings on warmth and tenderness.
You just reminded me of something, and I tell you, it's just like being there. That's really wild. When I was very little, there was an album called The First Family, Von Meter.
Oh, yeah, Von Meter.
Von Meter, okay. And in it was a guy doing an impression of President Kennedy. And I must have been 4 or 5 years old. And I listened to it, and I started doing this impression of President Kennedy. No, it's really funny. And my mother or somebody came in, I don't remember, but it was an adult figure who was like, wow, this kid's doing Kennedy. Come in, everybody. And they brought everybody in, and everywhere I went, you know, I was like, you gotta do Kennedy, you know, do Kennedy. And I mean, it was like the greatest magic I had ever discovered.
Oh, yeah.
I had everyone's attention.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was like...
And
it was,
approval.
Exactly, and approval. It was beyond magic.
Nobody alone.
And, oh, I know.
This is special shit here.
Oh, yeah, I mean...
This is good shit.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, did you not remember that until just that moment?
No, I hadn't remembered it. And with that, with the idea of the emotion, I remember the emotion of it. I mean, I knew that I'd done that.
Oh,
but
okay.
I remember exactly how that felt. I mean, I can see it. I can be there just like I was standing by that little stereo. It's like, yeah. This is good.
Good job.
But the sense, so you learn these magic words. You know, when that you can call mom and it can, and when that doesn't happen, then you feel this incredible rage and just desperation. So you got to find a new spell, new magic. Remember what I told you about that the Chinese belief system is that the baby isn't considered a human being for legal purposes until it can smile when left alone. Because then its magic has worked to the point where it can see itself as a separate entity. So from in ancient Chinese law, that the baby, you know, you could not be arrested for murder of that entity until the baby had reached that point. So the definition that the human race uses to define a person, because we all do the same thing, I say the kids aren't, you know, whatever it is when the kid has magic. That's when you start to like him. And they can start to con you.
Just laughing at the fact that I work for magic.
And you use magic.
Oh, I know. That's it. I mean, that's how I disconnected those events. You know what I mean? I think that's really funny. It's like every time, before I can say anything, I have to say magic. I mean, that's really funny. I never thought about that before.
Well, anyway, when your magic is working,
yeah, I know.
For the moment, your anger and your fear about being alone can be forgotten and tolerated. So then you can let magic work for a moment. We talked about in the past the magic of money and how money really isn't. You know what money, you remember what money was? You read in your history books and said that it replaced barter. No, it didn't. It replaced totems. In the past, in ancient societies, if I owed you a cow, you had to put an image of me on your mantelpiece to remind you that if you didn't pay it, that image would get you. That's what money is. Money is just a totem. Look who's the pictures on the bill that represent the government. I mean, money is just, and the more money, the better the magic. So all of it is just a totem that has no meaning. Now, the point is that we've got to get beyond all these things so that we see the futility of using our magic. Because God's not going to share his glory with a magician. Do you understand that? As long as you are using magic, God's not going to share his glory with you. So you wonder why there's no power of God in your life? It's because you're leaning on all your magic. Give it up. Renounce it. What? You look at me really weird.
That old black magic.
Oh, yeah. The big thing is when someone comes along and exposes the shaman's magic, he has to be killed because the shaman will tell the people that he's a bigger magician, that he's an evil magician. That's true in every ancient society. The shaman or the witch doctor, if someone came along and exposed the witch doctor's magic, then the witch doctor had to get the people to kill the guy that exposed his magic. That's all Christ did. He exposed their magic. Remember that in ancient societies, the common totem was that the child could not ever be separated from its mother or left alone for any reason for several years. In Western cultures, the child is left alone in his crib or room for many hours right away, even as an infant. That's the reason that we have so many problems in society right to that moment. If the child were never left alone, then his sense of self would become total. He wouldn't, you know, I've told you before this one, this is a weird one, but you can see its relationship. H.L. Hunt was breastfed until he was 8 years old. He was, and his mother never left him alone. He had no fear because his aloneness was never sensed.
That's really weird, you know, that same thing happened with General Patton. He was like 12 or something, 8 or something.
Yeah. We think it's, but in ancient societies, that's what they did all the time. That the mother, that's why the idea, the mother was the highest elevated office. I mean, she was like almost a goddess. And her role was only to be the mother. Never to leave the child alone. Not even alone for a minute. The child slept in the same bed. Was never alone. But you can see what would happen. How the whole sense of that child would develop in its earliest years into a something that was a superhuman.
Yeah, I'm a little arrogant, so I would think it just...
Well, regardless of all these, I mean, not now we're going to say, okay, we should go, you know, we teach all the mothers not. That's not. We're not teaching here. We're not here to have you, make you have more successful atoms or little human beings. No matter what the social customs, all these things, all they did was establish the definition of I. And the definition of I, your definition of you, is what has to go to the cross. You understand that? What is your definition of you? That's what has to go to the cross. That's why for most of you, going to the cross has no meaning, because you don't yet know what's your definition of you. What? Everybody understand that perfectly? Well, all your definition of yourself is defined by the moments of anxiety, by the envelopes. Remember, we just said that at the very beginning. Okay, if your if you had no those lack of anxiety as that small child, like an H.L. Hunt or a Patton, then there's a huge anchor in the core of your being, which is strong, which those guys, it would be almost impossible for them to become a believer. Yeah. You understand that?
Yeah.
Okay, for us that weren't, you know, we start populating our universe with all kinds of gods and fairies, things that protect us from malevolent demonic spirits. We imagine their existence, and it evokes terror and fears. It polarizes good and evil. We've got all kinds of little rituals we use for that cause something to be polluted, and an equal number of rituals that we use to cause something to be purified. Remember how you sweep your room, make sure there's no little monsters under your bed, that if you say the right words that the monsters will go away and they have no power over you? Well, those same rituals are still within you. If a particular child has it really rough as a child and that doesn't have much embrace or touching, or if he's left alone a lot, then his magic has to be really strong. I mean, he has to develop strong, strong magic if he's to survive. You understand that?
I was never scared of the door, but it's because there were so many of us too, they all stayed in the same room.
You were never in the door.
There is
that
silly person.
It seemed as I got older and I moved out on my own, I'd get scared being all by. It wasn't that I was scared of the dark or anything, it was I was scared of being alone.
In an empty room. Yeah.
Yeah, what you're saying is that, you know, that could be a description of what autism is.
You ever seen what happens to kids that have been born and raised in the city when you take them out of the country for the first time? Number three of them.
They go, it's so dark. It's so dark out here.
If his magic isn't successful, he's faced with the dread of being left out and hopelessly alone. Anyway, the process of desperation has a two-pronged effect. First, a gnawing resentment and aggressive retaliatory feelings on the one hand for anybody that caused him to be alone.
Oh, that's not true.
And then a sense of guilt for harboring those angry impulses against the parent, mostly the mother. Normally, this drama has the star as the mother. She is transformed into a terrifying stepmother, an ogre, a witch, whenever she doesn't meet or be the need-satisfying machine the child demands as his rightful possession. That's why the mother becomes the ambivalence. I mean, that's why for some of you that the mother figure is such an important issue in your spiritual life. Anyway, all of this has to go to the cross. And hopefully some of these things were useful in opening early memories. That's what we're, remember, that's the goal of this, is trying to get back to some early memories. Well, let me just a couple more things. The society relies on and exploits this separation anxiety as a means for inhibition, control, and commerce. The built-in terror restrains your willfulness, your hostility, and your malicious impulses. They operate as a first sign in censorship and character formation. Anyway, the idea, the separation anxiety, is the basis of all advertising. It's really the basis of all marketing. It's the basis of the television industry. It's the basis of the radio industry. It's the basis of the pleasure industries. Okay, see if any of these things cause you to be able to go back early in your memories. Remember, we're trying to get back to the points that where where your memories aren't polluted by your present definition of yourself. Okay? But that's a good one. The thing that he remembered, that's the kind of epinephrine memory that... Okay, take a big guy.